Lob to Lucas with three, with two. Shoots a three. Got it.
Yes.
They run a little rain with it, but it goes in. And Tijon Lucas with a three. And the Illini, who were down 20-8, are now down 28-26. Gets a pick from Finke. Finke now will shoot a three. And yes. Got another one. Finke from the right wing for three. Little give and go there with the two men. The Illini back within five. Rebound, Wagner. Out top, Bohannon for three. Got it. Oh, that's a killer. 96-87 Iowa. Down to 5 seconds. Here comes Smith into the front court. Left wing, Kipper for three. Missed it in the ball game, and the season is over for the Illini.
It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana. We'll get you caught up on your Illini sports news along with other area and national sports news. Here are Lauren Tate and Michael Kaiser.
Good Saturday morning. A beautiful Saturday in store for East Central Illinois. Plenty of sunshine. Good to see that once again today. Headed for high around 50 today. Plenty of college basketball conversation on today's show. As you might have heard, Brad Underwood will join us at 9:30 this morning. We'll take a look back at the season, look ahead to the offseason here, recruiting. Of course, you can't talk about actual recruits unless they've signed. So far, the only one that's done that is Ayo Dosunmu. So we'll talk a lot about the potential roster changes and more with Brad Underwood this morning. Talk to Brad Sturdy about recruiting more specific players and what he thinks about Illinois' chances are with Courtney Ramey and others. Of course, there was a commit yesterday. We'll break that down. You can join the program, 356-9397. Texas on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Email us your thoughts as well at talk@wdws.com. If you don't get to hear all the show this morning, a podcast will be on our website at wdws.com and on iTunes. Lauren Tate, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Well, Illinois got that commitment yesterday, as I just mentioned, Alan Griffin out of New York. Of course, he spent some time in Chicago. His dad is Adrian Griffin, who was an assistant for Tom Thibodeau, but now an assistant at OKC. 6'5", 200 pounds, 47% three-point shooter in New York, and a decent league out on the East Coast. But not highly ranked, but he's a three-star.
Well, the thing you have to I like the fact that he's a son of a pro, because it means he'll probably develop and improve as we go along. You know, if it's in the blood, it's better. However, we don't know if he can dribble, and we know he can shoot. The key to every guard, no matter who it is, he must be able to make shots, and he must be able to free himself with the dribble. What we've found with Jordan and Smith at Illinois so far is that they can't free themselves. They can get and, Frazier can free himself with the dribble. That's why he's able to get the shots off that he can. And whether Alan Griffin has that ability, I just don't know. We'll find out. But if you can only shoot, then you're dependent on other people to get you open.
And I think that having Ayo Dosunmu here, and I don't know who the other point guards are going to be right now. I mean, I know who's on the roster right now, but I don't know who's going to be here. I'd say Tijon Lucas is still here. I think that he finished the season really, really strong. And
but he can drive, but he can't shoot.
He hit a little rainmaker three against Iowa. Obviously, this is one shot. And two against Purdue. Those are only three shots. He doesn't take threes. He doesn't shoot very often, but he can score at the rim.
I watched Monticello play last night.
Yeah.
And Bloomington Central Catholic simply dropped their players off of certain Monticello players because they knew they wouldn't shoot.
Yeah.
If you have a player that can't shoot, you add a defensive player to the other team.
You do.
An extra defensive player, and it makes all the difference in the world. You can't have people dropping off your point guard. You can't have that. The guy's got to be able to shoot.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I think that if Tijon Lucas is still here, I think the ability he brings to this team is getting to the rim and kicking out to open shooters, because he does that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's his, because even when teams are backing off him because they know that he's not going to shoot, he still has shown the ability to get to the rim.
Yeah.
And if he's still here, they'll have him. Ayo Dosunmu can drive at will and he could kick out. But you're right, you know, can Alan Griffin, is he an Aaron Jordan type? You know, we don't know. We have no idea. And we don't know how athletic he's going to be, but he's long. Okay, and Illinois has very little players right now who are long and who are athletic, and so length is what I like about him. But
first time that Antigua's made a hit since he came, you know, as a recruiter, And it's I think, you know, Chin Coleman, I think, was responsible for DeSumo. And it's good to have the assistant coaches start to click, as Walker has done, as we've seen. Walker was certainly involved with Smith, and he's very much involved in the St. Louis area where Liddell is down there playing. And certainly he is one of two to three contenders for the Player of the Year, along with Talen Horton Tucker, obviously, from Simeon.
Yeah, and I think Talen Horton Tucker is right now, because DeSumo missed a month of the season with that injury. I think Talen Horton Tucker had a great season. He's, you know, probably going to be Mr. Basketball. Illinois made a lot of offers in New York the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear you pronounce the center's name.
You're going to put me on the spot like that. That's not cool, Lauren.
There's no way that we can pronounce that name. Get his first name.
Well, I'll get to him in a minute. There are two guys that I think I can pronounce. Valdir Manuel. And
okay.
Syracuse just offered him officially yesterday. Mm-hmm. So Illinois in some good company for him yesterday. He's a big man. Illinois also offered wing Frankie Policelli. I think so. I'm not sure, though. The other guy, we're just going to call him Georgie. His last name is really long, and I don't know. I'm not going to embarrass myself on the air, but you can look him up. The first name is spelled G-I-O-R-G-I. Look that up, and you can. But Valdir Manuel, that may be right. 2018 Patrick School big man, Syracuse. He's a three-star center for them, and he's 6'10". Played in Angola native. Played for the Angola national team in 2014. He averaged 26.3 points a game and 7 rebounds in the Union County Tournament.
Don't get excited about the fact we've made offers to 30 guys this year. Before the year's over, at least 30, and we get one or two.
Count.
So, you know, maybe we'll get three or four.
And here's the thing is that we'll talk more about this as the show goes along. And, you know, John Gross has always said he could count. There's only right now, with Alan Griffin's commitment, one scholarship remaining. That's most likely going to change in terms of how many are available. But there are a lot of offers. There are a lot more offers currently that are, you know, out there that are, you know, that Illinois has. You know, they've made 30 offers this year, but a lot of those are over and done with.
Oh, right.
And so, but there's still a lot out there. What would you say is out there right now at the top of your
head? I don't know.
Wait, there's three right there, and there are a lot more than three.
I don't know the number. I just don't, because I get mixed up between this year and next year. They've made offers for next year already. I don't know the number, but it's a good number. And the main thing is they need one center, and they need one more guard, or wing or guard. I consider Ramey a point guard, although if you get a second guard that can really shoot and break down the defense, that's all you care about.
Courtney Ramey, Webster Groves is another offer Illinois has outstanding. Austin Trice, the junior college, Division I junior college, full power forward, who is very athletic and
getting
rebounds.
They're going to make a firm offer to Trice. I think they're going to accept Trice.
I think that's a smart move. I've only seen a highlight video, and it's really easy to look good on a highlight video. I mean, you talk about that a lot. Highlight videos can be deceiving.
Are always deceiving.
They are. Yeah, yeah, they are. But what I like about him is what I saw, how hard he goes after the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, they could piece it all together where that's all – you don't see any of the lazy plays. But I've heard people watch him full games.
No, I think that's right.
And people have watched full games. I like his motor, his energy, how he goes after the ball. And Illinois just doesn't have a guy right now on the entire roster.
Okay, but you run the risk again.
He can't
once
shoot.
You got to play him way deep inside, because if you put him on the perimeter, they won't guard him.
No, well, I don't think he's a perimeter player anyway.
I understand that, but every player winds up on the perimeter sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Finke's our center. How much time is he on the perimeter? All the time.
All the time.
You know, and so.
But he's playing out of position.
Egwu, he would pop out on the perimeter a lot. Yeah. I mean, you do have moments when they happen to, you know, if you're going to bring him out in a pick and roll, it's kind of useless because he can't drop off and shoot. So you're losing, you have your center come out and mm-hmm. pick a lot.
Yes.
So that's perimeter. And once you get a guy that can't shoot, the word gets around, and they got five guarding four.
Yeah, and that's the problem they have right now. They have too many guys on the floor who cannot shoot consistently. The other night against Purdue, well over a week ago now, you know, when Demonte and Tijon were 4 of 4 from downtown, I'm looking at you and other guys. I'm going, well, what is this? Like this? I mean, this isn't going to happen again. I mean, those guys, neither one of those guys can shoot that like that consistently, and there are too many guys on the floor. when you've got two or three guys at times on the floor this season, this past season, where the guys just couldn't make a shot. And that gets you in a lot of trouble, and then you're giving too many layups and dunks at the other, and then you're really in a world of trouble.
I'm interested in how everybody talks about what we're doing offensively. We give up 96 points. How much did we give to Purdue? How many points was Illinois giving up late in the season?
A lot.
I mean, if the defense wasn't a problem, how come they're scoring so many points?
Yeah, the defense is a big problem for
Illinois.
It was a big problem for Illinois.
That's got to be resolved, and Finke's part of that too. Finke's got to improve his defense if they're going to play him in the middle, because he got really hurt by the Iowa players.
Illinois gave up this season 73.8 points a game, but there were games where they gave up quite a bit more than that. 104 in overtime to Iowa, 96 to Iowa just this past game. So both times Iowa can score a lot.
Interesting stat. Iowa made 33 free throws at this State Farm Center. That was a record, a half-century record, mm-hmm. for the most free throws ever shot by an opponent in the State Farm Center. And did you see how many free throws they had in New York? One more, 34. They actually had more free throws made in New York than they had in the State Farm Center when they set the all-time record here.
Which surprised me they were able to do that again.
67 free throws they made out of about 80. In two games, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, and they go to the rim a lot. I mean, Tyler Cookie, those guys just go to the rim a lot. And Jordan Bohannon shoots a lot
but
of threes.
If you can't guard them, you can't beat them.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
Illinois could not stop Iowa at all. I mean, Iowa, in that game you mentioned, they made 34, but they were 34 of 41. So they shot 81 free throws in two games against Illinois. They shot 81 free throws. That just shouldn't happen. And Illinois had 30 fouls in that game. Nearly 22 fouls. 22 fouls a game.
That shoots the most free throws in a game should win the game, because it simply means that they are superior in getting to the basket than the other team.
Yeah, Iowa was definitely superior in getting to the rim. And of course, again, when Illinois isn't guarding at the rim, it makes it easy to get to the rim, because Illinois just didn't have anybody who can guard at the rim. Well, give us your thoughts today, 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Again, coming up at 9:30, so about 18 minutes from now, Brad Underwood, Illini men's basketball head coach, will join us, recap the season, look ahead to the offseason and the future of the program after his first season at the helm. Then at 10 o'clock, Brad Sturdy of Illinois Rivals will join us, give us his thoughts, the latest on Austin Trice, Courtney Ramey, these offers out in New York. Maybe have him try to pronounce these names. man, I won't put Brad on the spot like that. He won't like that very much, probably. So we'll have to see. I got text of the 618 area code. Finke's out of position. That only matters on defense. Who would you have him guard, a wing? Well, it may only matter on defense, but putting Finke down at the five on the block, yeah, he always went out and shot threes, but Finke is more of a stretch four. And he's a stretch four, and he didn't even play the five, even though he was the center at times. He just didn't play, I mean.
No, he didn't play like a center.
No, not at all, because he's not a center in any way. LaRon Black, of course, the other day, he plays the four, but he foul trouble really was a problem as the season went down. Got a phone call we'll take real quick here before we take a timeout. Let's go to Alan. Alan, good morning. How are you?
Morning, guys. You guys pretty much hit on everything I was going to talk about. Our size is so out of balance, it's ridiculous. I mean,
what's that? I'm sorry.
Our size is so far out of balance. It's ridiculous. I mean, I didn't even know he was recruiting this guy out of New York, and I was perked up when I heard we had a commit, and then I found out it's 6'5". I said, "Are you kidding me? Can't we find anybody? I know we are, but it just seems like we can't find anybody bigger than LaRon Black." And now that I'm talking about our bigs, when I call our bigs, I'm talking about Finke, Black, and Nichols. All three of them are very poor defensively. That was a lot of the reasons why we got foul trouble, because once they got beat, they started grabbing or pushing. And offensively, at times, they were pretty good. But defensively, all three of them are just poor with their footwork.
Well, they're not very athletic either.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious the first time we played that Cook and Garza from Iowa simply were playing 6 inches higher than those three guys. They're playing over the top of them. I don't know where you find guys. I mean, Cook was a top recruit. Garza was a highly regarded recruit. These guys are in a whole nother level than what Illinois is recruiting right now. I mean, if they get the guys out of – Illinois took two big guys this year, Vasil and Greg O.
Ebo,
okay. And you can see that neither one is capable. I mean, it isn't that they didn't get a couple of big guys. It's that they're incapable of playing. And you may have the same situation with some of the guys they're recruiting right now.
The two plays in the Iowa game that just absolutely killed us, what few free throws they missed. They only missed three in the second half. They got two rebounds off that and got two baskets out of that, and that was just killers right there.
Yeah, well.
We had nobody to block them off. They couldn't block them off.
Well, first of all, rebounding and it's fundamental, and you have to want to do it. Size has nothing to do with rebounding. If you want to do it and you put a body on somebody and you do that consistently and you want to rebound, then you could out-rebound someone bigger than you. But if you don't put a body on you and just wait for the ball to come down, you're going to get killed on the glass. And that's what I saw a lot of. They just didn't put a body on somebody.
Right.
That's how you're going to get beat. But now you guys can be more athletic and still get the rebound over you. But if you're fundamental on boxing out and you want to rebound, I mean, you hear coaches say this all the time. Rebounding is about wanting to do it. And Illinois doesn't have enough guys who want to do it consistently.
Well, poor as Iowa was, and they were defensively, they're going to be a load next year. They gave Michigan all they wanted in that game, and I think Michigan's the best team in there. I think they're going to win the tournament myself.
Well, they certainly had a lot of close games lately. I don't know. I'm always amazed. I say amazed. I think we overrate Michigan State because
– Right.
They just won a three-point game over Wisconsin. They won a hard-fought game before that. Then the game before that, they won a hard-fought game. I mean, those games are going down the wire. You can't control necessarily a game with 2 minutes to go if it's tied. I mean, anybody can win. It depends on whether the three-point shot that somebody throws up there goes in or not. That's just what it, you know, you see that time after time. I mean, there's no way of assuring that you're going to win just because you're better. Doesn't happen.
Well, get a couple big guys for us, guys.
Well, you can talk about that all you want. There's nobody out there that I know of that could come in here and be a standout next year for Illinois that's a big guy. Now, I mean, sure, there's somebody somewhere, but I don't know who it is. And I'm not, and the last I heard in talking to people that know, the coaches had nobody that was of that caliber that they're recruiting.
And we'll stay on this topic with a text, Castle Heat and Cooling text line from the 618 area code. Lauren likes to say there are not enough centers to go around. Every other Big Ten team has at least one. Seems only a problem to get them to Illinois. Illinois has centers on the roster right now and guys who can play in the paint, but they're not good enough right now. That's the thing. All these fans want a center who can come in and help guard guys like Isaac Hawes and who can score in the offensive end. Folks, those guys aren't readily available.
Well, I stole a quote from Derrick Rose, who I had the good fortune to interview a couple years ago, and his statement was, "There simply aren't enough centers to go around," and I've been quoting that, and I believe it because look in the NBA, there aren't enough centers to go around. Mm-hmm. Look in the college basketball, there aren't enough centers to go around. Now the caller's right; there are some good centers in the Big Ten. The difference between the Big Ten and the smaller schools, generally speaking, is that they can't get the big guy. Yeah. The difference between the players at the smaller schools and the big schools is 3 to 6 inches. The difference in size. The smaller schools will take a 5'8" guard because he's quick. In the Big Ten, we won't take those guys. We turned down a heck of a player that went to Kentucky and became a star because he was too short. Yeah,
that was a huge mistake.
Yeah, that's what
massive.
I thought. But I mean,
he's in the NBA right now, by the way.
I understand that, but I'm just saying that there's all this focus. We want each player to be a certain size depending on what position he plays. We don't want a 5'11" point guard if we can help it, and there aren't enough centers to go around, and there aren't enough centers right now available that Illinois can all of a sudden become competitive with Michigan State and Iowa and so many other teams in the Big Ten.
Not every Big Ten team has a center who is really good and who helps them. Not every Big Ten team has that.
That's true, except that I go team by team.
Yeah, we need to break it down that way.
And I found out that I'm a little bit off on that in that most of these teams in the Big Ten do have a center that can hurt you, whether it's Wagner at Michigan, whether it's you mentioned the Purdue guys, whether it's Watkins at Penn State, what a difference he makes and getting hurt, how much that hurt them. Look at Minnesota. They had the big
people. They did.
They did have. I mean, now they don't have now, but they did have.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go up and down, Indiana had Morgan, and you say, well, he's a true center as far as
I don't think Wagner's a center at all.
Well, he is a center.
He might play the five, but he's not a center. He plays all over the floor.
He does.
He plays all over the floor. Yeah, he plays.
Steps out and shoots threes, but he's their center. He jumps center, and we'd love to have him. He'd be a center for us.
Yeah. But, all right, we got to take a timeout. Again, coming up at 9:30 is Brad Underwood, Illini men's basketball coach. We'll talk to him coming up in just about 10 minutes and 10 o'clock. Brad's dirty. Plenty of time for your phone calls and texts. Stay with us. This is Saturday Sports Talk on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk on DWS. I'm Michael Kaiser. He's Lauren Tate. That was Sean Miller just a couple of days ago before he got back on the sidelines for a victory to win the Pac-12 championship after missing a game for Arizona due to the DeAndre Ayton allegations just over a week ago. And Lauren, he's pretty adamant. He vehemently denies ever having that kind of conversation.
Well, how could that be? How could he not have had that conversation if somebody heard it? Well, the answer is maybe two or three things happen here. Let's take his side of it. First of all, his name is Sean Miller. The agent's name for ASM is Andy Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible in a discussion with a third party, which was Dawkins, Christian Dawkins, who worked for Andy Miller, the agent, is it possible that there was a mistake made between Sean Miller and Andy Miller, that this was Andy Miller talking to Dawkins about the $100,000 that it would be needed to give to Ayton? Is that possible? Or is it just simply possible that the information that Schlaubach got was inaccurate from his – obviously, Schlaubach didn't hear it. Mark Schlaubach, who released the story, is it possible that the person who informed him was mistaken?
That's the thing you got to worry about with this is that, I've listened to a few people talk about this situation, and because this is under seal and the story I read.
It's under a protective order.
Yeah, the protective order. And the story I read broke this down that very few people have access to information that would be on a wiretap.
And even less right now than we'll have it later, because if it goes to trial, it'll come out.
Yeah, it'll come out. Basically, like, the judge and the attorneys and the defendants in the case are the only ones that have access to this. And so it's very, very few people know. And so it'd actually be very easy to narrow down who told Schlaubach this information. And whether he has a relationship with people involved in this case or not, I don't know. I don't know who his sources are. I would say it's very unlikely that the attorney that is involved in this case that would have the wiretap information that Mark has a long-term relationship with, because this is not something he writes on a regular basis, because this just happened.
Well, somebody has either made a mistake or Sean Miller is lying. One of those two.
Well, or someone intentionally fed misinformation, and that's possible.
Well, it could be intentional. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what would you gain by doing something intentional? It depends on what's going to backfire.
And the thing with if you're Mark Schlaubach, and you're going to report something like this, that, and I'm repeating what others have said. This isn't me coming from me. This is a lot of people who have said this, that could ruin someone's career, that could ruin a young kid. You better be sure that it's right, because Sean Miller almost lost his job. And if this isn't true, I'm saying if this isn't true, Sean Miller could have lost his job for something that may not have been true. And ESPN has changed the timeline a few times. And
that's true.
And they
is all screwed up.
Yeah, the timeline is screwed up. The years when this happened, they've changed it two or three times in the last week, to where I'm even confused on when ESPN is saying when this alleged wiretap even took place. Sean Miller, you heard in the soundbite there, and I saw most of the thing live the other day, that someone talked to him in the past about a different player, not DeAndre Ayton, who he was told, they said, you want to pay this certain player? And Sean Miller said no, and that player never played at Arizona. He did not come to Arizona. He did not play for Arizona. So Sean,
interesting enough, Sean Miller didn't turn it in. Coaches don't turn in other players.
No, and
other coaches. And they said, just don't do it.
Well, I think the player is a part of the FBI investigation. He made it seem like the player is a part of the FBI investigation.
Well, what's interesting to me now, as they go into the tournament, and we're getting real close to the NCAA tournament next week, you've got one player from Texas, one player being held out after all this discussion.
Because Malik Pope returned to San Diego State this week.
Yeah, and Pope was supposedly offered $1,400 or $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently, I guess if you can't prove it, I don't know.
Well, we'll try to revisit this later in the show. We'll also talk about the Big Ten tournament yesterday, the quarterfinals, some great games, especially last night. Rutgers, boy, that was a lot of fun watching that game for sure.
It was a good game, wasn't
it? Yeah, we'll talk about those games coming up later in the show. Brad Sturdy coming up at 10 o'clock. It's the Brads on a Saturday Sports Talk today. Brad Underwood next on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS.
I kind of use this as, you know, a little energy for us, you know, for next year. You know, we're right there, you know. This was a hell of a season for our guys. I had an awesome, awesome season playing with these guys. You know, these guys are my brothers. You know, we worked really hard. But feeding off what Kip talked about, you know, next year we got a few guys coming in. I think we just got to pull those guys in and show them what it is to play for Illinois, you know. Fighting a lot now, you know, obviously new coaching staff, like you said, new system. So we just got to bring everyone together, you know, just play as one unit.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk on DWS. Michael Kaiser, Lauren Tate with you. That was Trent Frazier after the loss to Iowa the other night. Joining us now, head coach of the Illini men's basketball program, Brad Underwood. Brad, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you?
Pretty good. Well, you heard you were sitting next to Trent and Kipper the other night after the game, and just some good comments from Trent there, just a very confident guy. And where did his confidence grow from when he first arrived on campus and until the other day? How much growth did you see from him, just confidence-wise?
Oh, well, the one thing Trent's never lacked is confidence. And, you know, I think that you look back and reflect a little bit, and I go back to the hurricane relief game at Eastern, and there was a young man who got his ball taken at the half court line, and was a struggle, was so frustrated, was so nervous, so uptight, you know, about playing in front of that many people, to you know, being a all freshman team, one of the top vote getters, you know, that's tremendous growth. I knew Trent would have big games worth scoring because I'd recruited him for sophomore year. That's what he does. But his lack of confidence, that's not something that's really in his wheelhouse. He's always confident. He's grown in terms of his knowledge and his understanding of the game. And you know, with experience comes confidence, and he's garnered all of that.
Well, in terms of his leadership ability, is he growing in that department as well in terms of being a leader on the team?
Yeah, I think there's leadership's one of those hard things to find, and you can't force that on people. You have to let it come naturally, and you know, I think he's got the respect of everybody in our locker room. I think he's got to learn to become more vocal. One of our team's biggest deficiencies this year was we were a quiet team. We didn't talk. We didn't communicate. That connectivity is something we have to get much better at. And it's a team sport. You got five people trying to move and do things in unison. And when you don't talk, it's a problem. That's one thing Trent has to get much better at, especially as a lead guard, a guy that, you know, is a top scouting report. It's his job to not know just what he does, but what everybody else does. So he'll continue to work in those areas and get much better. And he got much better as the season went on.
Brad, this is Lauren. We've talked about Trent making the all-freshman team, and I expected Black to at least make the second or third team all-Big Ten. He did not. your reaction to that. What does he have to improve, and what's being overlooked here about him?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for him is when you've got 14 teams and you've only got 15 guys, we know most of the accolades go to the winning teams and right. go to the teams. You know, LeBron's one of the better players in our league. Our team didn't have the success that, you know, you start looking and how is Dakota Mathias not on for Purdue with the year he had? And I think everybody's got an argument to a certain extent with certain guys on their teams. But LeBron's improvement was mind-numbing a little bit in terms of, you know, we led the country, Lauren, in, as a team, in two-point efficiency through post-ups. Led the country. I mean, you talk about all the teams out there, the Arizonas, the Kansases, and we're right there in South Carolina. We're there with them that have great bigs. We led the country in that stat. I mean, we played everything through LeBron Black, and his effectiveness is shown through that number. I mean, you talk about a guy that we got shots for. We wanted to get shots for. We wanted to create offense. I think he's got to continue to develop to make others better in terms of passing the ball as he sees double teams. But, you know, his three-point shooting late. And then he's got to continue to, you know, to get stronger, to work on his, you know, on the other side of the ball defensively. You know, without LeBron in the post this year, man, I mean, we were number one in the country. I mean, he was a big cog for that.
Well, I want to talk about defense because you give up 96 points to Iowa, 100 and some in that overtime game to them previously. They made 67 free throws in two games. What went wrong with the defense, particularly against Iowa?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One, they're very, very talented offensively, and we had some challenges this year. You know, you look at who we started majority of the year or late in the year. We started very, very small, so you kind of pick your poison. You know, is it a challenge to let teams shoot threes and get in constant rotations, or you start doubling bigs and you get in that same thing. So it was we weren't overly athletic. We weren't overly big. Those things hindered us a little bit in terms of that. Yet we were third in the country in turnovers forced. You know, I think part of my experience anyway, Lauren, is when you're young and maybe inexperienced, your tendency is to foul a lot. That's something we've got to get better at. You know, the senseless fouls. We had they scored 18 points on just our mistakes, not blockouts on free throws, reaching and grabbing and fouls. And we've got officials every day in practice, and we harp on that, and yet we get into a game and we commit those things, and we can't do that. You know, we were small. It was going to be hard to play zone when you've got you've got Tijon and Trent, and that's not, you know, we just it was a challenge for us this year.
Well. Talking about, I know we had to go small, and I keep saying there aren't enough bigs to go around. Somebody called in and say there are enough bigs to go around. Look around the Big Ten, there are a lot of bigs. What's your take on, are there enough bigs to go around? Can Illinois find somebody to compete against the Garzas and the Cooks?
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of these guys, and it's Garza's a great example. I mean, he's just a young man that nobody really knew about. You got to find them. You got to be. That's why we're literally all over the world. This class in particular is not an overly deep one. The 2018 class, you start looking at top 100 guys in this class, and there's only about 17 or 18 of them in the top 100. That doesn't mean there's guys that can't play. You know, I think that you start looking at pieces of the puzzle and how they fit in different systems. You know, I look at the big kid at Michigan that a year ago never even sniffed our game when I was at Oklahoma State in the NCAA tournament. And this year he's backing up Mo Wagner, and he's had a productive year. So you look at the growth of Isaac Haas over the course of his 4 years, you know, it takes time to find bigs. Bigs develop at a completely different rate than most, but there's some out there, and we'll find our share, and we're on them, you know, it's something we've got to get better at, and we've got to get bigger, and we understand that.
Illini men's basketball coach Brad Underwood joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Michael Kaiser, Lauren Tate with you. Well, you've talked about throughout the season, and you just mentioned a little bit ago in terms of defensive struggles with athleticism, but you're wanting to get longer, more athletic, and find more shooting. And you only have one scholarship left at this point. I know you can count. All coaches always say that. What are you expecting in terms of changing in terms of the dynamics of this roster to try to get what you want in terms of the athleticism and getting longer and getting the better shooting in the interior?
Well, the one thing I count on is guys getting better. I think there's pieces of the puzzle that have to be put together. And obviously, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, we're the best team in the country in 2-point field goal percentage through post-ups. Trent's improvement, the middle of the floor was a pretty big mess, in most games. Guys are going to have to shoot the ball better. We average 74 points a game, on a team that had its challenges, in scoring at times. And from the 3-point range. And when you're number one, and I think we were number two in the league in 2-point field goal percentage offense behind Purdue. And yet you start adding space to the floor by being able to make threes, and guys will get better. You look at what Trent did. Trent started off, I think, 4 for 30. And then he shot that thing in at a mid 40 clip. If you take that segment out, and guys have to get better. But it's also an important piece. You don't win today in today's game of basketball without shooting. We transcend down to from the NBA level. The best teams in the NBA all have 5 shooters. And they all have great passing teams. We've got to get better. Our assist totals were not high enough. But that comes with familiarity and flow and being able to do some of those things. But I like some of the pieces, I like freshmen becoming sophomores, that cliche, guys got to get in the gym, and we've got to become more consistent there.
Brett, and you mentioned the Purdue game there. Was that the best offensive game you saw from the team this season? The scoring droughts was an issue throughout the season, lengthy scoring droughts, as you're well aware of. But that game didn't have as many moments of those. It's still, stagnant offense at times, but you went toe-to-toe with one of the best teams in the country and trading baskets, and Carson Edwards is just an incredible player. He showed that again last night. Was that the best offensive game for your team this season in terms of running the offense the way you want to run it?
Yeah, probably. It was right up there. I think that every style of play, every opponent, the flow of that game was better. It was, DeMonte came in the game and it was 4-4, 3-3 from the three. We were able to exploit Haas and really make him a non-factor because LeBron was able to step out on the floor and make some threes you have to be able to play offense and play basketball today. And everybody has to be accounted for. You can't have guys be unguarded you've got to play 5-on-5, so to speak. And that's something that, we did in that game. Guys stepped up and made those shots when they weren't guarded. So there's better flow. There's a higher assist total. It took us a little longer than I'd hoped to make reads offensively and pick up where how teams are stunning off Trent's pick and roll and And but that comes, again, that comes with time and experience, and that was probably one of the better games that way.
Brad, when do you, and maybe you've already done it, season ended just 3 days ago, when do you plan to kind of sit down with these guys? I know that you're busy recruiting and things, and just individually, and talk to them about what they're wanting to do. I know transfers happen in every program, and you don't know what's going to happen. The offseason is just now getting underway, but when do you plan on sitting down with guys and see what they want, and who wants to still stick around and who doesn't want to stick around? When do you plan on doing that kind of thing?
Oh, we have all those meetings. We'll have all those meetings at various times here in the next couple weeks, and we'll have most of those knocked out before spring break, and we'll be back in the weight room with Fletch. It's an area we've got to make major strides in, as our conditioning, our stamina, our physical strength. Guys, some guys have to put on weight. We've got to slim some guys down. So, you know, we'll have all those things as we sit down as a collective staff. That includes Fletch, that includes our trainer Paul, and get guys laid out a game plan. And we're going to make sure that since the season's just ended, we take the off season very serious. We pull up every player's synergy numbers and we look at their weaknesses you know, for instance, how they do going left, how they do going right, how they do shooting off a catch, and those become an emphasis then for our off season. So we're not just going to have blind meetings to have meetings, and we're going to have informative meetings. And the one thing that I take a lot of pride in is we've always been able to make players better and get them working on things that aren't strengths for them, and that's what the off season's all about for us.
Brad, the Big Ten is playing for its life in a sense, in terms of getting another team into the Penn State, perhaps into the NCAA tournament. At this point, only four are in, according to Lenardi. Maybe Penn State's the next four out. I don't know. Nebraska is certainly with a 13-5 record, deserves some kind of consideration. Your reaction to the way the Big Ten is being treated this year by at least, if not the people that are doing the selection, the people that are evaluating the selections?
Well, I think it's ridiculous, the fact that Nebraska's not in. I think it's comical. Penn State's, in. You can say all you want, you can take, and having been at a mid-major program at one point, you can take, you win 13 games in this league, you deserve to be in. And there's no doubt about that. You know, Nebraska's, they beat the teams they should have beaten. They had their schedule made. There's so much that goes into scheduling today. Sometimes you schedule teams that you think are going to be high RPI teams in the season, and they have a couple injuries. And they beat Minnesota when Minnesota was 10th or 11th in the country. Mm-hmm. That's a great win. It's not Nebraska's fault that Minnesota had two season-ending injuries. So I think they should be in. Obviously, Penn State, beating Ohio State three times now, I've got to think they're in. They're one of the – they've got a pro point guard, and they're doing that without arguably the best defender in the Big Ten, in Watkins. So I think that's showing their depth and their chemistry. I'm disappointed. We should – this is a – every year I think this is a 6-7-8 bid league. And it should be.
Let me ask you about in evaluating teams, should you put greater emphasis on February over December? Should you? Is that appropriate to do that?
Well, I think you can get into a lot of things. I think you get a lot of teams that, Lauren, that's a question that we can go back and forth on every year. I mean, you can find teams at the Power 5 level that never leave home. They don't play anybody, and in terms of strength of schedule. I look at our case. Look at Trent Frazier in December in the Northwestern game. He hardly played.
Yep.
And he wasn't a factor. Yet he's on the all-freshman team because he grows and he develops and things happen and players get better. And there's mid-year transfers now, so teams change dramatically with some of those things. You know, I'm still a big fan. I like the last 10.
Yeah, I did too.
There becomes less and less on that. You know, next year our strength of schedule will be one of the best in the country with who we have in the non-league. We'll be hard-pressed to find anybody that will play a tougher schedule than us. And there is value in that. So I go back both ways, back and forth both ways on it. And I do think there's – I do like the fact that the committee's gone to emphasizing road games and much more so than neutral site games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about that and weighing that a little differently. But that's a hard question, Lauren, because you go both ways on it.
One last question from me. When is the next signing date for basketball?
Yeah, we're in the middle of April.
Mid-April, okay.
Yeah, so we've got spring recruiting gets heated up here pretty good, and then you've got some different dead periods, and then we've got a couple of then spring evaluations in late April, but the April signing period doesn't really have a huge time frame on it, or a short time frame where you've got to get stuff done in 3 or 4 days. That one's extended about a month. So
Brad Underwood joining us on Saturday Sports Talk for just a couple more minutes. Brad, when you took over this program just under a year ago, March 20th, as you were here as weeks went on, the culture of this program, was it more difficult to change the culture of this program than you thought it was when you took the job in terms of difficulty of players buying in and things of that nature as well?
Well, I think every program has its own identity, and everybody's got maybe a different perspective. I think that taking over 3 jobs in my career, everyone has been drastically different in terms of what's gone on and what's been needed. And I think there's no doubt that culture is at the forefront of every one of those. Stephen F. Oklahoma State here, you have to establish a culture. I have tremendous appreciation for, and I'm going to use 2 programs in this league, Michigan State and Wisconsin. You know, the first time Wisconsin has not been to the NCAA tournament in 19 years this year. That's longevity. That's a tremendous culture, and you have to put your stamp on it. And that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen overnight. Drastically different rosters. Drastically different expectations sometimes. So I don't think it was any different. I think in terms of what I expected, I think I knew, quite a bit coming in. I keep saying it all the time. We've got tremendous young guys. We've got to keep fighting for our culture, and that's a winning culture. And it's guys that are excited to be at the University of Illinois, want to play for Illinois, want to grow, want to work to become pros, and want to play for each other. And that's, to me, that's the ultimate college experience. I've been very blessed in my career is to be with great people who are winners, and I know it works, and we'll keep fighting for that.
Brad, I know that just being around you and hearing you talk since you've been here, I imagine this is not difficult for you. But how difficult is it to stick to the process, not make quick recruiting fixes, and just you know, stick to the process and know that this takes time and not trying to fix it quickly and just knowing that cutting corners could hurt the process?
Well, it's easy for me. It's harder for you guys.
Yeah.
That's the reality is that you know, I understand the social media world. Everybody wants instant gratification. Everybody wants the instant success. It's great when you get to it. Sometimes it's work. Sometimes you have to lose the Maryland game 4 times, as we did, to understand and to grow. And as painful as some of that stuff is, there's lessons to be learned there. I don't accept losing, and I understand it. But yet there's moments where you have to grow and you have to develop and you have to be patient, and patience isn't one of my strong suits, but I do understand the process. I know I've seen it done. I watched dear friend Frank Martin, very similar situation, get a team to a Final Four and grow it, and watch Bob Huggins turn near last place team around at Kansas State. And So I've been here before, and we'll get this back to its rightful place.
Well, I hate to let you go without asking about Kipper Nichols, and hit 31 the other night. It was a losing effort, but he just had some big moments this year, some up and down moments. What do you expect from him this offseason? The 31 points in the, I think, 27 in another game. Several games where we had double-figure points, so there's a lot of potential there for him. What does he need to do to try to become more consistent? How does he get there?
Yeah, turn potential into reality, and that's consistency. And you know, potential's a really, really bad word for a basketball coach. And Kipper's got tremendous talent, he's got the ability to do that a lot of nights, not just one or two, a lot of nights. And getting that out of him is what this offseason is going to be about. And, you know, becoming better conditioned, becoming stronger, becoming more versatile, becoming a guy who does all the little things that go with the points, and those are winning things and culture things. And Kipper's got tremendous talent. I'm a Kipper Nichols fan. Spent a lot of time with Kipper this year, and yet he's got to continue to expand and grow.
Well, Brad, thanks so much for your time this morning. We greatly appreciate it. When things start to calm down, if they ever do for you, maybe come by and have you in studio at some point.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thanks,
You're
Brad.
Welcome. Have a good weekend.
All right. You do the same.
Thanks. But that is Illini men's basketball coach Brad Underwood here on Saturday Sports Talk on DWS. And a good conversation with him, Lauren, covering a lot of ground. But now the question is, we'll see what happens to the roster here this offseason and who leaves. You know, I tried to get into that with him, but in terms of the meetings thing and who wants to stay, but obviously he doesn't know yet.
If he did, he wouldn't tell you.
Yeah, he wouldn't tell me. That's the thing. That's why I didn't really push the issue, because he's not going to tell me if he knows who's going to leave or who. You know, Lovey was open about this. He told us. He's like, someone we wanted to leave and someone we were okay with, and coaches aren't going to name names in that situation.
That's right. Lovey had 15 guys leave, and he didn't announce any of them.
Yeah.
It was just that happened, and that it'll happen all over the country. We'll have 700 again, maybe. That's a pretty good guess. That's how many they had last year. And Illinois has had, let's see, they've had 21 in the last 10 years, 21 transfers leave in the last 10 years. So that's 2 a year. And in the bad years, you have more, and the good years, you have less.
We'll have to see who they are, and the hope is that key players don't leave. Guys that you need that are key cogs. But it just sometimes that happens, though, when you you have a new coach. He's here for a year, and sometimes players just don't mesh after the first year with that coach, and they want to move on. So we'll see what happens to the roster in terms of current players, and we'll see what happens to recruiting. And that's what we're going to talk about next. Brad Sturdy, sticking with the Brad theme here on Saturday Sports Talk of Illinois Rivals. He's up next here on DWS.
I believe we're an NCAA tournament team now. We just ran into a buzzsaw with Michigan, but I don't think that undoes what we've already accomplished. And what we've done is we've won games away from home. We've beaten the teams that we should beat, with maybe one exception. And to go through that type of season where you have to win, I think we won 8 out of our last 9, 4 of those on the road. We showed we can win away from home. At the end of the day, if quad one is the holy grail, That's a tough deal. But I don't think quad one is the holy grail. There's top 100 wins in quad three. And so, you know, you just have to see where it goes.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk. Michael Kaiser, Lauren Tate with you. That was 10 miles after the thrashing the Cornhuskers took yesterday to Michigan, 77-58. Not what the Cornhuskers needed in terms of the NCAA tournament hopes. Nebraska 1-6 against quad one, as you heard Tim Miles mention there, 2-3 against the quad two, an RPI of 54. A strength of schedule 116 with a 22-10 overall record and 13-5 in the Big Ten. Joining us now, Brad Sturdy of Illinois Rivals. Of course, here to talk Illinois recruiting. But, Brad, solve the Nebraska situation for us. Brad Underwood just said it's silly that Nebraska is not in the NCAA tournament picture right now. What's your opinion on that situation, and should they be in or out?
Well, I mean, I think if you watch them play, to me, they look like an NCAA tournament team, you know. But if you haven't seen them play and you're just looking at numbers and who they've beaten, and it's going to be tough for them because they haven't beaten, got a lot of those quality wins, you know, against the top teams. And that's a tough thing. I mean, I don't know that that's fair because, you know, this is a team that also, you know, Kansas may end up being a one or a two, and they lost by 1 point to them. So, I mean, they're a team that can compete with anybody, but at the same time, you know, sometimes it just comes down to numbers. And I think one thing that could hurt them is, you know, more teams winning conference tourneys, you know, teams that weren't supposed to, possibly, maybe an upset, a team that plays their way in. I think Penn State could hurt them, especially if Penn State's able to pull off an upset today. I think they've got a great shot of sneaking in. So, I mean, you know, or being in. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things, and we got another week of games. That's the weird part about this is normally you're playing right up to the end of the, you know, the conference tournaments. Well, now they've got another week, 8 days before they're going to make these decisions. So does Nebraska get kind of forgotten? I don't know. Maybe their wins look better. Their record looks better as other people all lose games too. So we'll just have to see what happens. But I think they're going to be very close. I think right now they're probably out. I don't know that that's right. But because, you know, I've watched some of these teams in the, you know, the SEC or the bottom of the Big 12 that they're talking about, you know, being 8, 9, 10 seeds. And I think Nebraska is as good as those teams, if not better. So, and they've obviously got a better record. So I think it's going to be, I think they're probably out now, but we'll just have to see what happens and see what the committee thinks next week.
As you look at it right now, Brad, Minnesota, the win for Nebraska over Minnesota is Nebraska currently, well, as of the other day, was the first four out. They beat Minnesota. Minnesota was good. And when Minnesota had a full roster before Reggie Lynch got kicked out of school and before they had Minnesota had injuries, why does that win not carry more weight for when it happened and how good Minnesota was at the time?
Well, and I think that's one of those things that it's a tough thing. You have to go and look and see where were they when you played them. It's, you know, it's like Illinois lost to, I think it was, you know, when you look at, they played Northwestern, they had McIntosh, and he missed some games. You know, they play Minnesota, they lose. I mean, so every team kind of goes through that where you lose some games that, maybe if you play a team at a different time, it matters, or when a team's hot, you know. So I think that's a big part of it. Hopefully the committee looks at all those factors. I mean, obviously Minnesota was a, you know, early in the year was a pretty good team when they had everybody healthy and everybody there. Losing, and they had lost Coffee for a while too. So losing those two impact players really hurt them. And so I think that Nebraska win should carry more weight. But again, if people just look at the numbers and say, well, they've only got this many wins against this, then that's where they kind of maybe not get a fair shake.
Yeah, it's a pretty cold thing when you just put all the schools up on the board and evaluate the December games the same as February, which is my big complaint. But I got to talk to you about recruiting, because we can't talk to Underwood about recruiting. We can talk to you about that, and that's what everybody wants to talk about. Well, by the way, where'd you go last night?
I actually watched girls last night.
Oh, my
girls
gosh.
State tournament.
Okay.
Illinois's got there's a sophomore from Maine West that Illinois women's team has offered. So mm-hmm. I watched her play, and she's really good. So got to watch a little bit of that. So it took a little different route for me. So.
Well, Illinois landed a player, and I know you have sources beyond the state. Alan Griffin from New York. What do you know about him? Is this a good pickup?
Well, the thing about Griffin, the good thing for all of us in-state people is he was in the state, for his first 2 years of high school. Played at Oak Park River Forest.
Right.
He was one of the top five players in the state in that class back when he was here in Illinois. You know, considered a top five in-state player. His dad, obviously, is a NBA assistant now with the OKC Thunder, and he's moved out on the East Coast. He's a very, very good shooter. Shoots 47% from three for the season, shooting over 80% from the line. He's got a great feel for the game, very good ball handler. The one thing that, he does defend, he rebounds, but he's not like a high-flying athlete. He's got some quickness. I think a lot of times people think athleticism's all running and jumping, but he's got a quick first step. When you watch him on film, and that's what I like him. He's got that a little bit of burst, and he can kind of shake free, but he's got a nice release on his jump shot. He's able to, he's 6'5", he's very long, so he can defend multiple positions, and it kind of fits what Underwood needs. And Illinois was 13th in the Big Ten in three-point shooting, so getting guys that can put the ball in the basket is never a bad thing. And and that's kind of what they were looking for with this kid.
What about a big man? Do you see a big man on the horizon for Illinois?
Well, I think it's very likely they're going to bring in a big man, at least one. I would expect them. They've offered a junior college kid named Austin Trice, who is the 6'7" kid, and he is extremely athletic. And now, watching him play, I think he had like 8 field goals, and 7 of them were dunks or layups in the game, a couple weeks ago. But he's very explosive athlete. He's going to play around the rim, and he's only 6'7", but at the same time, he's a guy who's willing to go in there and rebound and defend and do some different things. You can pair him up with the bigs they have. And then they want to bring in more of a shot blocking presence up front. They've, looked at different kids, some big kids, 6'10" to 7 foot. They offered a kid in Florida yesterday, Samba Kane, who is, he's very, very athletic 7 foot kid, who actually Chin Coleman watched work out yesterday, and they offered after watching the workout. So they've got some kids that they're looking at. They're kind of casting a wide net here, see which kids, kind of show interest and which kids they can get on campus and then add. And that would be what they want to do. They want to add, probably Trice and then probably another big guy to add that front court depth, because one problem they have is, and you saw this at the end of the year, Michael Finke finished the year very strong because he got his legs fresh. And I think he was playing too many. He has to play too many minutes. I mean, I think if he's a 15 to 20 minute guy and you have guys that can do other things, I think Ron Black, his problem, it's hard to keep him on the floor because of foul trouble. But if you have pieces who can go in there and help in that regard, I think it adds, because finding an impact big that isn't maybe a fifth year, which obviously they're going to be in the fifth year market as well. And that won't happen until after next week when all these conference tournaments play out and people start, transferring. But if they can find a fifth year, that you might find a guy who can make an impact instantly. But most of these guys are going to be guys who come in and can do something like maybe block shots, a rebound, or just, maybe like with, the Griffin kid, he's a high level shooter. So they're going to find pieces. The only guy really, probably the two guys that they've looked at that are probably instant impact guys who can do multiple things are probably Tevian Jones from California. And then, Courtney Ramey, obviously from St. Louis. And so
is Ramey the best point guard available among the seniors right now in the country?
Yes, I think he is.
Ooh, wow.
With the kid going to Villanova. Yeah, he's the best guy out there, and he's a true point guard. He's a kid who his passing skills are just phenomenal. He's got some suddenness. He's got some explosion that he's added over the years. He's a good shooter. I wouldn't call him a great shooter, but he's a solid shooter. He scores, but he also, what he does, he gets all of his teammates involved and he's able to defend. He's a competitor, just an intense competitor. I know Underwood loves him. You know, there's a lot of concern about Missouri in that one with him going to Missouri for the Missouri-Arkansas game, and Michael Porter Jr. maybe playing his first game or the, you know, second game of the season, I guess, first game since the injury. So there's a lot of concern about that, but Illinois, it's kind of I don't know. Ramey's really good, so you always want the kid like that, but you know, with the season that Trent Frazier had, with Io DeSumo coming in, you know, you've got a pretty good, you know, point guard isn't necessarily a position of need, but you can always get, you always want good players, and Courtney Ramey fits that mold.
Yeah, I would say he does. Ramey, to me, is he would be a step ahead of all of them, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Well, I think you can play them together.
Oh,
think
yeah.
About Ramey,
oh, yeah.
Right. Io. They're 6'4". You know, Ramey's 6'4", Io's 6'4", 6'5", Griffin's 6'5". And, you know, Trent's smaller at 6'1", but those are guys that now you can play any of those three spots because they have size, and they have length, and they have athleticism. So, you know, that's obviously, you know, we've seen Illinois do pretty well with having, you know, basically what they call three guards out there, three-point guards, who could all pass, handle, and shoot. And, boy, that'd be nice to see again.
What do you expect in terms of the number of players leaving from this squad?
I'd be surprised if there weren't at least two that left. You know, I think, you know, you never know. I don't think that they're going to, you know, I don't think they want to force out a kid like, you know, these senior kids like Pinky and Jordan who have 1 year left, because they fill a role and you got to be able to replace them, and that'd be tough. And I think they're, you know, and they're good kids. I mean, you know, so they're not a problem with the program. So I think it's going to be more kids wanting to leave because maybe they want to try a different system, feel like they can get more playing time. Because to be honest, Underwood wants to get guys, he's not recruiting guys who are just going to come in and not play. He wants guys to come in and play. And so that means that, you know, you can only play so many guys, and I know he plays 10, but you're going to have 13 scholarship guys. That means some guys aren't going to see a lot of playing time. And so got to understand, I think they'll, you know, they'll be honest with them and appraise where they're at. And those kids are going to have to make those decisions, but I'd be surprised if two of them didn't leave. I'm pretty sure one of them will leave for sure. I think two is probably the number. If three left, it wouldn't shock me. More than that would probably really surprise me.
Brad Sturdy of Illinois Rivals joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS as Lauren's phones. Who's calling, Lauren? Is it someone important?
really.
No, I'm just kidding. No. Brad, as you mentioned two guys. Who was it, guys, you definitely expect to be back? Because there is the Tijon Lucas dynamic. If they add Ramey, where does he fit in? You know, Mark Smith wants more playing time. You know, LaRon Black, you know, had a great season in this offense, and I think he's only going to get better. But who are the guys that are question marks for this team?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of question marks as far as players. I mean, I think Trent Frazier obviously is going to be around. You know, I think you look at, you know, Mike with Finke and Black, those are two guys who could leave and not have to sit out. Everybody else who moves would have to sit out. Some of the freshmen could leave. That would be it. They'd have to go to JUCO. I don't think Damonte Williams is going anywhere. I don't think, you know, there have been rumors about Mark Smith. There's been rumors about different people, you know, Tijon Lucas. There's been rumors about Kipper Nichols, and there's been rumors about, you know, Finke and Jordan, and all, you know, so there's been lots of rumors about these different guys. You know, Matisse might be a guy that, you know, wants to go back home, try something different. Obviously, it's a tough year for him. I know talking to him early, you know, transition just to the food was difficult. So, you know, so it's a tough transition. I mean, so there's a lot of options. I think no matter what, you know, they're going to have the end of the season meetings, sit down with these guys, explain to them where they're at on the pecking order, what they see from them, what they want from them, and see. And those kids got to decide if that's what they want for themselves. And if they do, they'll stick around. And if they don't, then they won't. And they can always find a better fit. I, you know, and it just kind of it's tough for these kids to go and sit a year, though. I mean, that is such a difficult thing. They want to play basketball, you know. So that makes it really hard. And so I don't think there's always people that are unhappy, you know, during their season. And most of their parents are probably really unhappy because that's how parents are. But there's kids that are unhappy at different points of the season, you know, with the, maybe it's the losing, maybe it's the not getting enough playing time, or don't like being yelled at, or, you know, whatever it might be. You're always going to have kids that are unhappy. But at the end of the day, making the decision to leave and being unhappy are a lot different, because most of the time you may be happy. And, you know, sometimes people get sources because they talk to a kid after a rough situation and rough day, and they're like, oh, yeah, you know, and so they think, oh, he's leaving. And so I think sometimes you got to always put it in perspective and look at the whole picture, and sometimes that's the most difficult thing to do.
Brett, how critical is Laron Black to this team next season and returning and being a part of this team and just in his shooting ability and his scoring ability? Just he got better and better in terms of when he was on the floor, of course. The foul issues kind of reared their ugly head as the season got wore on. But how critical is his return to this team next season?
Well, I mean, it's very important. I think if they have – and from my perspective, if they – when you add a kid like Iodesumo and you have Laron Black and Trent Frazier and you have some, you know, older pieces now. You've got a kid like Kipper Nichols who will be in his junior season. You've got Michael Finke, a fifth-year senior. You start putting these pieces together, and Io is a kid who can come in and make a difference. Maybe it's Mark Smith who makes a jump next year. Demonte Williams makes a jump next year as freshman sophomore. Now you've got a team that I think can play in the NCAA tournament. But thing is, that's with Laron Black, because I think Laron Black is that guy. When you need a bucket, things are struggling, you throw him the ball in the post and you let him go to work, and he scores. And he's very good at, you know, scoring the basketball. He makes some shots that probably when you look at him, you say, that's not a very good shot. But then it goes in and you're like, great shot. So and that's kind of Laron Black in a nutshell. And so I think that's where, you know, having a guy like that is very important. Trent Frazier is a guy who can get his own shots and, get, you know, get buckets. And, you know, I think Io is that kind of guy too. So having more guys like that, it really helps your offense. It spreads the floor. It spaces out. And the other thing about Laron is he became a, you know, an excellent three-point shooter. Shot almost 50% for three this year. So, you know, that's something that, you know, really adds to the team as well. So, yeah, it's important that they keep him around. I mean, you know, obviously he might be the difference between this being an NCAA tournament and or having another year that's a struggle.
You touched on Tijon Lucas a few minutes ago. I've been a big fan of his all season. I know he's had his up-and-down moments. I'm a fan when he and Trent are on the floor together, so Trent can play off the ball a little bit and not have to be constantly with the ball in his hands because he can just get open and shoot threes because Tijon could break down the defense and get to the rim and either score or dish it out, which he's done several times. And I thought he finished the season really strong. What did you see from him and just improvement from his game as the season wore on, you know, after the suspension?
Well, I like that he became a willing shooter. Yeah. I mean, he started taking the open shot. I mean, and I know he's never going to be a great shooter, but if you don't shoot it, they're not going to guard you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you shoot it, you know, they have to at least guard you, and he made a couple, and so it opened up some different things. I think he had a great finish this season. He's a guy, he can hound the ball. He can, you know, play that pressure defense that they want to play. He's got the ability, you know, to penetrate, to get in the paint. He's got good vision. He's a good passer. Obviously he's not, you know, he's not a kid who's going to, you know, he's actually a pretty good finisher, you know, for his size, but again, he's not a high flyer. He's not going to go in and, you know, drive down the lane and dunk it. And, you know, he's not a great shooter and not a great scorer, but he's a piece. He's a guy who can play, you know, I think in a role where he's playing 15 minutes a game, he's excellent. I mean, coming off the bench, playing him 15 minutes, pressure defense for, you know, stretches and handle the ball. And you know what you're going to get from him. He had that consistency at the end of the year. And I think that's one of the reasons Illinois played better at the end. They start getting consistency from some of these guys. And I talked to Underwood one time about it, and he said, you know, that's a nail on the head. We don't know. You know, people are always like, well, there's no rotation. That's because every game you don't know what you're going to get from these guys. And I think Lucas kind of put it together at the end. You kind of knew what you were going to get. And so, obviously, the whole team looked better.
Brad, what do you think about the idea of paying players, and how would you go about that? How much, and how would you go about it?
Well, you're going to have to wait till next week when my article comes out about all
okay,
that.
Okay, well, no, give us a hint.
I really think that there is a dynamic that is there. There is some money that's there that could help this. I don't feel like, you know, no matter what it is, I don't think it's going to be enough for everybody to be happy. But I think the NCAA kind of needs to show that they are a players, you know, they are about the kids and they are about the players. And when you're paying coaches $7 million, $10 million a year, you know, whatever it is, Saban, Harbaugh are making in football and whatever, you know, or $3 or $4 million in basketball, you know, you're basically saying, you know, the kids, oh, we're getting a scholarship. But the reality is, no matter who coaches Illinois, you know, it's about having a quality team and having those kids. And so if they want to show that, they need to kind of show that. Maybe it's a stipend that they get, you know, that helps them. You know, all those are things that can happen. So I think it's
Hang on a minute. Are you just talking football and basketball, or are you talking about
sports? Well, I think – well, and that's the problem you run into. That's the Title IX thing. Do you just play men's basketball and men's football? Or do you play – you know, so that's going to be the tough part. Yeah, it is. But I think they have to do something – and there are ways to get around it from a legal standpoint. Well, you'd have to set up a you'd have to show that basically with a revenue model that would show that, you know, these sports bring in this much revenue, and so therefore with the revenue and they could do that across the board. I think that that's one way they could do it. The revenue could, because here's the reality: they're allowed to pay the obviously, you know, what's Coach Fay making at women's basketball? 450,000.
Yes,
and Wonder Woman's making $3 million.
Yeah.
So obviously, I mean, there's differences in salaries.
Yeah, but that's not not students. I mean,
well,
they're not amateurs, is what I'm saying. I mean, how do you get through the amateur rules?
Well, and you know, that's one of those things they're going to figure out. But I think they have to find a way to do it, because if they don't, and I don't think it's going to. And here's the thing: I don't think paying players is going to change, like paying, you know, or paying them a stipend is going to change that guys are getting, you know, $100,000 to go to some college, whether it's Arizona, Louisville, wherever it is. I don't think that's going to change. I think that's still going to happen
Cheating is going to continue?
Yeah, I know. That's shocking, isn't it? I mean, it's going to happen, you know. So you can, you know, people can bury their head in the sand and say it's not going to happen, but it is. You know,
you mentioned the word stipend, Brad, and they're getting a stipend. Is there some way that they could increase the first of all, let's understand, the men's football and basketball teams pay for all the other 18 or 20 or 25 sports, depending on what school.
Exactly.
They're paying for it. And
Title
IX guarantees that everybody is treated the same financially. Now, could you take that stipend and double it or triple it or quadruple it? Would that be possible?
Well, I think that's possible. I think that's probably the way you're going to have to do it. I don't think you can just outright pay them, you know, a salary, but you can increase the stipend. And that's kind of what I was getting at. But, you know, you may have to increase the stipend in those sports, because those sports are the ones bringing in the most revenue and so forth. And that's where you run into a problem. Can you do it legally? Well, we won't know until we try. You know what I mean? I mean, is somebody going to, you know, somebody going to fight it? Maybe. But
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
That's where you have but you have to put forth the effort, you know, and I'm not saying that coaches, those coaches, you know, we talked about this, you know, yesterday they're in Florida and they're out on the East Coast and they're in Underwoods in St. Louis and Jamal Walker wasn't watching me. I mean, they're out all the time. They're working hard. Don't get me wrong. They earn their money. But at the same time, you know, those kids are working hard too. And, you know, it's a way for them to kind of show that they're a player-centric organization in the NCAA. And they got to really figure out how to do that.
Brad Sturdy joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Give him a follow on Twitter at Sturdy32. Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, said he's hopeful the scandal with college basketball will lead to major rule changes, but schools paying players is likely a non-starter. Brad, another thing that's getting a topic out there, a conversation, is players benefiting off their likeness. For instance, Trent Frazier and having his jersey with his name on the back for sale in stores, and bring back the NCAA basketball game on EA Sports and having the actual names on that game, letting them make money off of that stuff, kind of like the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit. Of course, you might remember that. But is that a way to do it? And then we don't have to worry about this Title IX stuff.
That's exactly the way – that's what I'm writing about next week. So you stole my thunder, but that's okay. No, but I
promise I haven't read your pre-column yet.
No, come out next week. So, that's exactly what that's kind of where I'm going. I think, you know, because then you're not subject to Title IX, because it's a player making money off his likeness, making money off, and it doesn't even have to be, you know, we've seen this where a guy they put pictures of guys on T-shirts and the kids had to pay, you know, was it UNLV, Greg Anthony, they had to pay back money, you know, and so forth. So you go back to, you know, all the way back. This isn't new. You know, this is, you know, Lauren knows this. I mean, this has been back since Lauren was a kid. So, well, maybe not since he was a kid. But, I mean, they didn't have the NCAA then, right? So, no.
Okay.
But you know what I mean. I mean, I think that this is a way to get around that and then it's Title IX. It's about, you know, it's basically, then it becomes more of a capitalism type thing. It's a free market type thing where whoever, you know, if people want to buy that, you know, jersey, maybe that there's a piece that goes with it. You know, because basically these kids market themselves on Twitter all the time. They got thousands of followers because of where they go to school. I mean, and that's, you know, that's another, you know, another way that they do this. And, you know, we have 18-year-old kids around the country making money off of this. their YouTube channels and things like that, and millions of dollars. So, I mean, I don't know that, you know, this is that crazy anymore in today's day and age.
Brad,
so
I'm
it's
take
something
you,
they definitely have to look at.
I'm going to take you back to high schools real quick. I see the Champaign Central and Muhammad Seymour both advanced last night, and they will play teams from Springfield, teams that you're very familiar with. Can Central and Muhammad Seymour advance against those quality teams over there?
Well, I think there's a serious grudge match going on between Central and Lanphier, evidently.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the quotes from Blake Turner.
Sure.
Lanphier coach. He had some pretty interesting quotes last night. So I think that one's going to be a blow. I do think Central can beat him. I think Lanphier is talented. They're athletic. I think that's going to be a really good game. It's going to be very intense, no doubt. I think Central's more skilled, got a couple athletes themselves, but I think Central's got a little more skill, and we'll kind of see if they can handle the pressure Lanphier puts on. You know, Lanphier's not going to – and keep it in, not let him get out in transition, because Lanphier doesn't shoot the ball well from the perimeter. I think Southeast is probably the – if I'm picking a team to come out of that regional – or out of that sectional, it's Southeast probably. But, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I think Muhammad's going to have a tougher time. But
sure.
You just never know. With the three-point line the way it is, somebody gets hot from three and can make a game different.
And
so.
Danville lost last night to Moline. That kind of – was that expected?
That was a shock. That was one of those shockers that really surprised me. So, there are games that sometimes games happen like that.
You bet. It did happen last night. So I'll tell you, there were some strange ones last night.
Yeah, and that's just – and a lot of these teams, I think part of that is sometimes they don't see each other. You know what I mean? Because you've got these different groups. They're so far apart. I mean, Danville and Moline playing in a regional championship game is kind of crazy if you think about it.
It certainly is. It's Indiana playing against Iowa, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And so, but at the same time, that's the nature of the beast today, with the four-class system. And so,
I'm so used to, all my life, Champaign Central, Centennial, and Urbana played in the same division, right? The same regional. Well, not anymore.
Yep. Nope. Well, Brad, thanks.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Thanks for your time this morning, and give Brad a follow on Twitter, @Sturdy32. I love your bio, Brad. Covering Illini basketball for 12 years now while also teaching, coaching, and raising three girls. I've got a 7-month-old daughter, just turned 7 months today. We'll have to talk another time about how I can survive just one, let alone three. That's
Good luck with that. Good luck with that. I lost a lot of hair, so yeah. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, three weddings coming up for you, proms. Oh, that's you've been saving for that all these years?
Evidently, that's why I'm covering basketball.
Hey, listen, you got a lot to look forward with three daughters. I had lunch yesterday with three daughters, and they're all 60-ish, and they're all just babies.
There you go. I got a ways to go to get there, but hopefully I do.
All right, Brad, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys. All right. Bye. Bye.
Brad Sturdy of Illinois Rivals. Again, give him a follow on Twitter, @Sturdy32. Covers Illini basketball, recruiting at all the games, especially the home games anyway. Plenty of text messages to get to. It's maybe some phone calls as well. The phone number 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. No more guests, so plenty of time for your comments on this show. Got some coverage of the Big Ten tournament yesterday, maybe more on Sean Miller. All of that coming up on Saturday Sports
Talk.
We need
to tell people to tell us where we went wrong this first hour and a half.
Yeah, please.
You got a half hour to tell us.
Yeah, you got a half hour. Yeah, tell us what we did wrong, and please, you got 28 minutes, including commercials. Stay with us. Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Alan Griffin committing to the University of Illinois, and Brad Underwood and the coaching staff yesterday out of New York. Spent a couple of years, as you heard Brad Sturdy talk about, in Chicago before he went out to New York. His dad's an assistant with the Oklahoma City Thunder. So he's a shooter, shoots 47% from three-point range. Those were his comments yesterday. He spoke with Scott Ritchie here at the News Gazette and giving his thoughts on why he committed to Illinois and kind of feels like home after he spent a couple of years with his dad was an assistant under Tom Thibodeau. So we'll see how that works out right now. Illinois, the 2018 recruiting class consists of two players. Ayo Dosunmu, of course, signed back in November, and Alan Griffin has not signed yet. He cannot sign until April 11th is the official signing day. Now, the signing period goes through May 16th, April 11th to May 16th for this upcoming 2018 recruiting class. Plenty of text messages to get to, but we're going to start with the phones. Let's go to John. John in Champaign, how are you?
Good morning, guys. Doing fine. Interesting show. But I have a particular question about a couple of so-called big guys, E.J. Liddell and Francis Okoro. Are they? How would their talents relate to college?
E.J. Liddell is a great player who will probably be one or two and done. He's got a tremendous jump shot. He blocks shots. He's an A1 player. In my mind, he is contending with Talen Horton Tucker for the player of the year, but he is a junior at Belleville West, so you got to wait another year on him. I think he's way ahead of Okoro, who's had a couple of rough games here. They got beat yesterday, huh? And Norval West is out of it, and he hasn't been a big scorer. He is a good rebounder. He does block some shots. He has definite potential. However, I don't put him in the same category with Liddell. Now, other people do. I don't. I think he's good, but I think he's raw.
Do either one of them have the speed and quickness that we're looking for in
yes,
a good
yes,
big man?
Yes, yes, they got speed and quickness. Yes, for big men.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I wanted to see them play, and you just told me that I missed out on Okoro.
Well, Okoro, he's not going to be a heavy scorer. I think he can hold his own. I think ultimately he can hold his own in the Big Ten. Now, he could come out this year if he could figure out a way to graduate, because there are reports, and this is not official, and don't consider this official, but I'm told that there's a possibility he may not be able to play the second semester next year. And if he can't play the second semester next year because of age, then he could perhaps, if he could graduate, he could go right into school this year the way that the player at Missouri Porter did.
Tillman,
Porter came in after his junior year of high school.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just thought
the younger Porter,
okay.
John T. Porter, came in. Yeah. He reclassified, they call it. If Okoro could graduate, if Okoro could graduate and reclassify, but that's a big question that I want to repeat again. I have no information official that he could do that.
Uh-huh.
There's talk
of
it.
Okay, well, I was concerned about what they would be able if what they do now would translate to college. So I'm encouraged to hear what you had to say about it. So I love Black, but Black, honestly, he has to play out of position. He gives you everything he has, but sometimes he gives too much. But I didn't want to try to replace him with someone that was basically the same size and was restricted, with maybe speed and quickness.
Well, both those players are juniors right now that you mentioned, and, of course, Black's got one more year.
Mm-hmm. All righty. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
I have one more question.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
If you have a second.
Yeah, hurry up.
I don't know if you want to comment on it or not, but Black, number two.
Kipper
Nichols. As I watch him play, sometimes I see the athletic ability that he has, and I thought when he came in here, I said, he's going to do some alley-oops for us day after day after day. And I realize you have different defenses. But some days it looks like he will get his mindset that I'm going to tear him up. They better get out of my way. And the next time he'll try to tippy-toe in there and get it blocked. Can't understand it with that amount of talent. I'm thinking, waste,
Well, wait, I don't know if you heard when Brad earlier, just got to get him to be consistent. And that's where they're at with him. And sometimes he can't finish around the rim, and sometimes he can. So got to run, John.
Yeah,
thanks so much.
Thanks.
Yep. Bye. Go back to the phones. Marty in Pinehurst, North Carolina. Marty, what do you got for us today?
Morning, Michael. Morning, Oren.
Morning, sir.
An aside, Michael, as you were talking about guys like Damonte Williams early on that couldn't shoot, et cetera, you need to remember that Luther Head couldn't shoot when he came to Illinois either.
Right, he's just a freshman.
And D. Brown couldn't make an outside shot his first couple of years, and then he became a very good shooter, so there's hope.
Kendall Gill wasn't very good his first couple of years either.
No. There's hope they'll improve. Keep that in mind. That's what coaches are for. And, shoot 500 threes a day, and you never know what might happen. An interesting thing happened to me last week, and unfortunately my computer was down, the hard drive died, I couldn't get to you. I was doing my usual workout and sitting at the spa at Pinehurst, and I heard some guys complaining that North Carolina was being cited for, in this FBI thing, for paying somebody for a lunch or something, $75, and they didn't know why North Carolina was being picked on. And there are other people that did worse things. And I was sitting there, and after a while I said, they kept going on, and I said, well, maybe it's because you cheated for 18 years and got by with it, and didn't. And the guy said, no, now, where are you from, Duke? What, you know, whatever. I told him, well, I was an Illinois fan, but he said, you're mad about that game. And I said, no, I said, I was an educator, and it seems to me if you cheat that long. One of the gentlemen said, I was a member of the Board of Trustees at North Carolina when this whole thing broke. And here's what he said. We took this seriously, and we buttoned it up right away. And I said, so you don't think you did anything wrong? He said, oh, no, it was wrong. It should have never been done. It was a terrible thing. He said, but I said, well, you spent $17 million on lawyers fighting. He said, well, we weren't going to let them take our titles away from us. I said, wait a second. You just said it was wrong, and you're telling me that Roy Williams didn't know a thing about it. I said,
that's unbelievable.
Roy Williams knows who his players are dating. You're telling me he doesn't know anything about something going on for 18 years. No, he didn't. I said, you're telling me nobody in that staff knew anything about it. He said, I didn't say that. He said, some people on the staff knew about it, but they didn't want to get fired, so they didn't bring it to his attention.
Well, some situations head coaches are completely off hands, and they don't want to know about it. But
here's the last thing I said. I said, so you're telling me if Dean Smith would have been alive, this still would have been going on? He said, no, I didn't say that.
Well, it started under Dean Smith his last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it did, too. But he said, no, if Dean would have known about it, it never would have happened. I said, so you're telling me that Dean would have stopped it, but Roy Williams didn't. I said, is that what you're telling me?
Who was between Dean? You had Dean, then you had, what, Bill Guthridge?
Yeah, Gutfeld, and then
Doherty, and then Williams. And, of course, Matt Doherty recruited that entire team.
I just thought you'd find it interesting that, you know, they're admitting it was – and this guy was on the trustees. He said, it was wrong, it was dead wrong, but we weren't going to let them take our titles from us. So we're playing people that shouldn't be playing, but that's okay. We still deserve the titles. It was just an interesting conversation.
Yeah, that's not surprising, Marty.
No, I know it is surprising. I just thought you'd like to know the way.
I that's actually kind of neat that you can talk to a trustee, a former trustee, who was openly admitting to someone he doesn't even know that. This is totally wrong. But we want to keep our titles, so who cares? And it's like,
yeah, I thought it was rather interesting. He'd admit that to me too.
Yeah. careful who you talk to. Thanks for the info, Marty. Now we dislike North Carolina even more than we already did.
Yeah, I know. It's a tragedy. They think there's no big deal to it. Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
It's a sad state of affairs. You guys make a great day, great show, and Underwood will do a fine job. He'll get the right people in they need to fit his system.
Thanks, Marty. Have a great weekend.
Remember, in this system, it's about talent, because the more possessions you have, the team with the better talent wins.
Yep. We'll have to see how that shakes out this offseason.
Make a good one.
Yep, you too. Let's get one more phone call in here, then we got to get another timeout. Let's go to Eric. Eric, all the way out in Baltimore, Maryland. Good morning, Eric. Good afternoon for you.
Yeah, almost. But I'm a loyal listener, so I've been listening to Lauren Tate for about 35 years. So I like agreeing with him, and I like disagreeing with him.
What do you disagree with?
No, just some things. We talked about the recruiting for Weber and how he never got any good recruits, and that was a ways back, but I want to make a couple comments. I get to watch Bob Huggins at West Virginia. My daughter goes there, and I get to watch him play the kind of style that I think Underwood's going to be playing at Illinois when he gets the depth. And perfect hire. I haven't been more excited about a basketball hire since Bill Self. I don't think we have any problems in basketball, but unfortunately now we got to turn to football. And something that struck me one of the last Saturday shows when you had Lovie Smith in, you asked him a question, and his comment was, "Are you where you want to be right now?" And Lovie said, "Yeah, I'm exactly where I want to be right now." And I found that almost it was strange to hear that with how bad the recruiting's been, with how bad the people leaving the program has been. And I'd like to see where you think they're going to finish in the Big Ten, He's number two on the hot seat for coaches, active coaches right now. I know he could go 0-9 in the Big Ten this year, and they'll still bring him back. But where do you see them finishing in the Big Ten, and why do you think he answered that question that way?
Oh, boy.
Thanks, Eric.
I don't know how I can answer why he answered that way. I mean, I don't think how he answered the question has much to do with where they're going to finish. And where they're going to finish is probably going to be in the lower second division, I suppose. I don't see that there'll be massive improvement. There should be some improvement when freshmen become sophomores, and they're going to have a bunch of them, you know, a dozen or more of them are going to be playing right in the front line.
Well, and in terms of the recruiting aspect, I know that he said that for the number of wins that we have had in the 2 years we've been here to get the recruits we've gotten and the couple four-stars that they got, that's why they're happy with the recruiting, because they are not having success on the field.
Wait a minute. Have you ever heard a coach at 100 schools ever say he was unhappy with recruiting?
Well, no, you haven't.
Then what point does it make that when somebody says they're happy with it? What's the point?
No, I'm just telling somebody that's why he said it. I'm rehashing.
They all say it.
Yeah, but I think that he...
It means nothing is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I think when he clarified it by saying that we haven't won any games, we're still getting some of the players that we want, I think it means a little bit more, but still your point's very valid. And I think that he feels somewhat optimistic, because every coach always feels optimistic. I think this year isn't the year. I think it's 2019, and the hot seat conversation is just a non-starter. He is absolutely not on any hot seat whatsoever. And there needs to be some kind of continuity to give this somewhat of a shot here. And whether it's going to work out or not, I have no idea. You can't continue to have three
it's
or four
really
wins.
Really tough to go into a season with weakness in linebacker and no definite quarterback. I mean, that is really
exactly
a bad way to go into it. And that's where Illinois is right now. And plus, they've got some other problems on the squad that we don't know how it's going to work out. I mean, there aren't many all-stars on this team.
We'll take a time out. We'll come back. We've got some text messages to get to, plenty of those. Lots of text messages we'll try to get to, maybe some conversation on the Big Ten quarterfinals yesterday. Two great games last night. Stay with us here on DWS.
Carr to his right. Carr between the circles. Carr for three to tie. Banked it in! 10 seconds left. Dokic on Carr. Carr looks at it, crossover, drives, backdoor Reeves, slam dunk Penn State with 2.8 to go. Into Jackson to midcourt, Jackson near wing, Jackson to win the game. It's no good, and the Nittany Lions advance to the Big Ten semifinals for the first time since 2011, and they sweep Ohio State in all three games this season.
Steve Jones on the call from the Penn State Nittany Lions Sports Network through Learfield. Penn State with a big win, 69-68 over the Ohio State Buckeyes, trying to keep their NCAA tournament hopes alive. Right now they have a better chance to get in than Nebraska does, according to Joe Lunardi. Joe Lunardi has Nebraska as the first four out. Actually, Nebraska has a better chance to get in than Penn State, excuse me. That backwards. Nebraska, the first four out. We'll have to see. He changed that late last night, so I think Penn State's also kind of around that line. So Nebraska got blown out yesterday, so they may have fallen down. He hasn't completely updated his website as of this morning, but a great win for Penn State yesterday, Lauren, and then they're just trying to continue this to try to get in. I think they're an NCAA tournament team. I like all five starters, and one of them, of course, is hurt.
Well, when they have Watkins in the game, they're an NCAA-level team. When he's out of the game, it really hurts him, because he's a integral part of what they're doing. What's he shooting from the field? 2 out of 3, 67%?
Yeah, something like that. He's pretty good. Another great game last night. I didn't get to see much of the Penn State game, but I saw a lot of the Rutgers and Purdue game, and the Rutgers Scarlet Knights nearly advanced to the Big Ten semifinals. Rutgers led by 8 in the first half, led at halftime, were tied in the second half, but a lot of good highlights here from Rutgers and Purdue, who had to survive last night.
Edwards clears, don't even get the screen. Edwards has to guard him. Sanders, shake, baseline, Freeman, double clutch. Oh! Whoa! Sanders has just played solid. The dive appropriate. Sanders curls down the lane, hangs in the air, up the glass! What a play! Torrey Sanders! This kid Puckett does not back off, Gus. He'll make some mistakes occasionally. Take a couple of shots in question, but can't question his ticker.
Feels like a home game for the Scarlet Knights. Carson Edwards on the fade.
He has a soft ticker, that guy. Plays with the utmost confidence and backs it up.
He had 5 at halftime. He's got 20 now.
Carson Edwards, a great, great player, at 40 against Illinois. Purdue advances to the semifinals. The Purdue will play Penn State today. Rutgers lost 82-75 in a game that was much closer than that. Again, Rutgers led at points in that game. So just a great performance. And yesterday, of course, Michigan already, Michigan State beat Wisconsin by 3. Nebraska lost 77-58. And to clarify earlier, Joe Lenardi says right now Penn State has a better chance to get in the NCAA tournament than Nebraska does as of this moment. We'll see what happens.
They got games played.
Yeah, they do. We'll see what happens today.
If they win, they'll definitely be considered.
Some text we'll try to squeeze in here. 217 texter in the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Bring back Zook for football. At least he can get you to 500 and an occasional Rose Bowl. Otherwise, we keep going through coach after coach, winning 2 or 3 games a year. That's not going to happen. I'm concerned about Underwood's choice of assistant coaches. All are capable, but they're new to Underwood. None seem to understand his spread offense or the sort of athlete he needs. Typically, a head coach has one trusted assistant that tags along from job to job. That doesn't exist here. Well, you should be thankful that his trusted assistant, Lamont Evans, who, of course, they were together 1 year at Oklahoma State. Lamont Evans got arrested by the FBI.
Be thankful.
Yeah, be thankful, because Brad was hoping to get him here, and that thankfully did not work out. Another text in the 217 area code. NCAA needs to impose harsh penalties for cheating. Pete Rose was banned by Major League Baseball. Don't you think Bruce Pearl deserves a lifetime ban from the NCAA? We don't have time to go there right now. But I don't know. He continues to get away with things and continues to win a lot of games. So what are you going to do? 785 texter, if players are allowed to make money off their likeness, won't that possibly unfairly help the marquee program? No, actually, it depends where the players go. If a great, great top 5 player comes to Illinois and he would sell his jersey, then it works out. Not going to really matter where the kid is. If he's really good and really popular, his jerseys are going to sell. Several of them are texts to get to. Out of time, unfortunately. Thanks for those. Thanks for your phone calls as well. Lauren, thanks to Brad Underwood and Brad Sturdy for coming on with us today. A lot of great Illini basketball conversation.
Okay.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Illinois baseball coming up at 3 this afternoon. Central Illinois Business is next. For Lauren Tate, I'm Michael Kaiser. Talk to you next week.